What is that gloomy racket?
That's the Human League.
That is electro-nonsense.
They're electro-pioneers. They invented music.
Are you aware of the music known as jazz? Are you aware of jazz music, the movement of jazz?
Why do you keep going on about jazz
for? Because it's the most important art form in the 20th century.
No one listens to jazz. I hate jazz.
You hate jazz?
Yeah.
You fear jazz.
Shut your mouth.
Yeah, you fear jazz, don't
no,
you?
No, I don't.
You fear the lack of rules.
No.
The lack of boundaries. Oh, what's happening? The shapes, the chaos. Huh? Deep up. Scoop up.
Don't start scatting.
Beep up.
We don't need scat at this point.
Beep-a-dee-ba-bow.
You better stop scatting.
Scoot up. Do-ba-ba-dee-ka.
TBTL.
You have no reflexes, your blood tastes like root beer, and some of your bones appear to have vanished.
This banner has letters on it. They spell Bon and Voy.
You see, first we get your attention with the boring stuff, then we hit you with the excitement. Bam!
Do you have any idea who I am? I'm a verified Yelp complainer.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome, everybody, to a Tuesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
It makes so much sense. It almost seems obvious.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
I like turtles.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. It's a shaping up to be a beautiful Tuesday, although I'm trying to push through certain amount of loginess. I think it's because I got on this weird kick yesterday where I wanted to fry up some pasta. I saw a thing on TikTok where a guy boiled some pasta and then afterwards he fried it up a little bit just to give it some kind of nice crunch, a little toastiness. And I did that. It was a whole thing. It was very involved. It was okay when I was done with it. But even though it was only okay, throughout the course of the night in watching football and The Vow and various things, I managed to polish off, about a pound of it.
I can't believe I ate that whole thing.
So your guy Burbs is coming at you with 1 pound of pasta still digesting in his stomach. Here on episode 3265 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
We'll see if I make it through this entire episode. You know, sometimes if you don't take your garbage out, that you can have some problems.
Stinky!
Well, someone has invented something for that. As of today, you can get on the waiting list to buy a $200 garbage can.
Imagine a world where your waste bin does everything a waste bin should, stopping rot, stink, and germs before they even start.
By freezing your garbage. Good news, garbage heads. There's a quantum leap forward in taking care of your garbage. We will explain the deets. Also, speaking of technological leaps forward, Venice recently held back a high tide event, keeping the city nice and dry.
Bring me a little water now. Bring me a little water, Sylvie.
With something called the... excuse me, that's the pasta coming back. We're good. Just going to take a sip of... bubble water. Clear everything out. All right. We're all right. Okay. They're using something called the Moses Project, which is holding back what are called Aqua Alta events. We'll get into that. Oh, and the United States Supreme Court has ruled. Well, really what they did was they didn't rule in the case of a band called Spirit that once toured with Led Zeppelin. Somebody from the estate of somebody who it was in the band Spirit, a guy named Randy California. What was Luke Burbank taken? A guy named Randy California's estate was suing Led Zeppelin, saying that Led Zeppelin ripped off the band Spirit when they wrote the song Stairway to Heaven.
Rock and roll don't come from your brain. It comes from your crotch.
Anyway, that case has now been settled. We will play you both songs, and you can decide at home if you agree with the United States Supreme Court, such as it exists in this current state, in the year of our Lord, 2020. Hey, speaking of rock and roll, this guy...
Are we ready to rock?
He's always ready to rock. He's the longest-running Cobro of the show. Known for his drawings of tall ships, he's Andrew Welsh, and he's joining me right now. from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. I just spent your entire intro trying to Google my way to an answer of the question that we raised before the show, which is, have we talked about this Led Zeppelin story before? Because I told you before the show, I think we talked about this maybe when the lawsuit was newer. And, you know, I know it's been in the news and I've heard of it elsewhere. I could have sworn we talked about it on the show, but all indications are we have not. So if I accidentally gaslit you before the show, because you seemed concerned that you didn't believe that you didn't remember it, so you might be right. I might be crazy.
As opposed to the times when you intentionally gaslight me.
Right, exactly.
This like was one of those unintentional times. Yeah, it's so funny how, well, a couple things have already occurred this episode. We are a mere 5 minutes in that do live rent-free in my head. One is when I just had a massive glottal event throughout. So you and I spend actually a not insignificant amount of time getting the microphone and audio levels kind of dialed in before we start recording, so things sound real nice, or as nice as they can sound. And so I had the microphone and my audio drops all calibrated, thanks to your help. But throughout the intro tape, the Mighty Boosh stuff that was playing, I could feel something happening. In the words of Borat, something is arriving. And I kept turning my mic down and then clearing my throat, but then being worried I didn't turn my mic back to its original position. And despite all of those attempts, did you notice that were my levels slightly off?
I noticed that your mic was blowing out a tiny bit on your end. I wasn't going to raise it on the show. I was going to bring it up in the break. But since you're going here, can you just turn it down a tiny bit? And we'll make sure all the levels are fine in post. But I did notice a couple of times during the intro that you got loud and it distorted a little bit. I don't know if the listeners would have noticed. It's very insignificant, but it'll put my mind at ease for the rest of the show.
So then as I'm doing that whole little patter at the top, I can just feel... I can feel that I need to clear my throat, despite all of my attempts to handle that situation before it was my turn to talk. And so then having to actually stop and do that, for one thing, I know it grosses a lot of listeners out, which I apologize. There was just no way around it, other than saying, Andrew, can we stop down?
Which
and
is then fine.
We literally stopped the show, in the words of my favorite real estate agents. And by the way, did you appreciate that email I forwarded you yesterday about a couple of primo condos available?
Yes, I have not stopped. I have not unsubscribed from the list yet, so you don't have to forward me that stuff. Yeah, I like the way I said, hey, you know, I'm getting all these emails from something I didn't sign up for. Now I'm getting doubled because I'm getting them, and then you're like, hey, don't miss this one.
If any of the listeners are on that mailing list, if you could also just send Andrew stuff. Okay, so that was thing number one that I regret, and I was like, just get past it, Burbs. And then thing number two was the fact that I was under the impression that I had completely just like blacked out something that we had talked about on the show, which is not infrequent that I do this, because as you indicated, I was like, yeah, we're going to talk about this Led Zeppelin story. And you said, just so you know, we already talked about that. Like, we should talk about it again because there's a finality to it. But just heads up on that. And I really appreciated it. But I was just struggling with, like, how could I? Because I also spent some of the time before the show getting both of the songs in question and isolating the audio tape and playing them kind of side by side. And I thought, man, I think I would have remembered all of that. And by the way, I'm not ruling out the fact that we talked about this at some point. But that's another thing that I was just like, man, my brain is my and in the words of Jack Rebney, my brain is such shit that I completely forget these things now.
You know what I'm thinking? Because I even told you before the show, I said, I think we talked about it a long time ago. Don't feel bad, because I think it was way back when I was living in L.A. Because I just had a vague, you know, I can't explain it. I just had this vague memory of hearing about, reading about, talking
you
about the story.
You also had every detail of the story right. Like, literally, you were like, yeah, it was a band that tour opened for them, and this has been going on for a long time. Like, You have all the details right on this story, which makes me think we did talk about it at some point.
But you know what I'm realizing now? I wonder if this was a topic on my real, no offense, on my real talk show when I was in L.A., Press Play. So now I'm just to see if I can figure this out. I'm now. Would that make everybody feel better? Or would it make everybody
let me clear my throat.
Okay, how about this? Supreme Court declines to hear. That's
probably from today.
That's today. But it does look like Madeline might be talking about that today. Anyway, yeah, we'll figure it out. I don't know.
I bet you that's what happened. I bet you that you were producing a segment on it, or, you know, overseeing the production of a segment on it for your real radio job those many years ago.
Here it is.
Which, this is going to sound like I'm trying to kind of drag you, and I'm not. But it's interesting that you had complete command of the information, like down to the very granular level about this story. And I wonder if it's because for your like high profile important radio job, which I'm not saying that sarcastically, you were the executive producer of a like major public radio show in Los Angeles. That's a big deal job. I wonder if your brain was like prioritizing that information because you needed it for your real job, as opposed to like me, you know, talking about Rudy farting or something, or whatever we get up to on this show.
I don't know. I think what happened is I probably produced this segment. I found it here. We talked about it on June 6, 2014, Stairway to Heaven lawsuit. This was on Press Play with Madeline Brand, except Madeline was out. This was my favorite public radio host, who is super famous despite you negging her all the time. Barbara Bogave was filling in this day. A band called Spirit is alleging that Led Zeppelin ripped them off. So it probably stuck in my head because I'm probably the one who cut all the tape for it, and I just probably really knew the story and produced it up.
You still have that tape? You could have saved me 20 minutes this morning.
You want to listen to it? It's a 14-minute segment, and a lot of listeners say that they prefer Bogave over Burbank. Not me. Uh-huh. I'm just saying a lot of people say that. So we could
save some
time.
People are saying it very strongly.
They are. They really are. Oh, my God. I can't. You texted me that about something this weekend. I can't remember what it was or if it was appropriate to talk about here. But just so you know, whatever you responded to me with, people are saying it very strongly. You had me literally lolling. I read it.
Oh, good.
I can't remember the context.
Yeah, I can't either. It's probably just as well that we put it to the side, only because if we start in on the political situation in this country, that will derail the rest of the show. But I think it might have been related to sports. The only time when I try to not make – actually, that's not true. All I've been doing on Twitter is making jokes about the current president. I was going to say that I try not to make too many jokes about him, because the problem is that when you joke about him or do things that are kind of – I don't know. I'm worried about normalizing him, and even in my own mind. And I'm also worried about just putting any kind of – energetic wind into his sails, just as a thing that exists, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't play a lot. I don't think at this point we play any audio of the actual president. We used to, as a way of making fun of him, but then it's like, no, that's kind of triggering. At least it gives me a bad, sad feeling. I forget what it was the other day. Oh, yesterday I was showing Carrie this stupid joke I put on Twitter where it's like the president is holding up what I wrote in was like a receipt for a hospital bill, and it was like fixing the COVID. It was like $700. You paid $750. Your change is $50. We appreciate your business. And then I was like, there's no way this is real. Like, and I showed it to Kara. I was proud of my Photoshopping. It's not Photoshopping, but whatever the program is where I write things on pictures now, which, by the way, I learned how to do this weekend. So watch out, world.
Oh, great.
But anyway, I showed it to Carrie, and she was like, you know, I get that that's like meant as a joke, but that's something I could believe him doing. So it doesn't make me laugh. It just kind of makes me feel uneasy. Mm-hmm. And I totally get that. I understand that. You know what I mean? So anyway, when I said so, I think I was probably talking maybe with you and Chris about like, you know, Nick Foles starting in Chicago.
I know what it was. I think it's worth mentioning, actually, because listeners know this story. This was a text chain between you, me, and Phyllis as we heard right as Phyllis shared with us that screen cap of the presentation that said, I'm the most popular, or I'm the most likable host right. In the APM Digital Studios thing. And you wrote, it was still stinging to you, I think, a little bit that you were coming in
this
number
day.
Two. You said, everyone knows that mail-in ballots on this are a disaster. People are saying it very strongly.
But see, even that joke, I'm glad that you laughed at it. But again, it's that kind of thing where it's like, you know, I don't know. It's like I am so racked with anxiety about what's going to happen in this country that somehow I feel like even making that little joke between you and Phyllis and I, me, you and Phyllis – is in 3, 2, 1. You, Phyllis, and me. Wait. Even making that little joke Feels like I'm somehow adding to the confusion around voting, which I know I'm not. It's just texting with my friends and colleagues. But I don't know, man. I'm all torqued up about the person running this country and what is going on. I mean, it feels surreal to me at all times, and I never know if I'm doing something very subtly that's making it worse.
Yeah, I'm with you on all of that. I don't usually whether it's normalization or just me getting the bad feelings or what it is, whatever it is, I don't usually go in for that either. I think you'll be pretty hard pressed to find any examples of me saying like fake news, which I know we've talked about, or anything like that. Although now this is just a terrible, terrible thing for me to do on the show now, because I don't really like to read my tweets on the show. I'd like to leave that to your department. But I was very proud of a tweet that I tweeted today that I know will be an incredibly unpopular tweet, meaning that just like it was just for a handful of people. But I don't. This is going to be slightly hard to explain. Somebody whom I don't know tweeted a photo of a man on a black and white television screen, and it just says, "This is the mystery guest contestant. Who is it?" This is from the Game Show Network, and our boy Dave Sims, announcer for your Seattle Mariners, wrote, "The Music Man, Robert Preston," and I just retweeted his tweet and said, "Well, he's no Roy Donk." And I did that for basically you. Like that's a tweet directly directed at you, although I did not tag you in it.
I'm going to go.
You have to like it because that's the only reason we do this.
I'm going to give that a like. I'm going to go to the Andrew Walsh Twitter blog, and I'm going to get. You got 15 likes on that, bro. You don't need my help.
Yeah, well.
I on the other hand, I went on a real tear on Saturday night, and I had to basically like I didn't have to, but I decided to delete a tweet. And this was the joke in my mind was, again, it's a grim, dark joke, but it's that it's notable to me that these primarily men, like the current president and his allies, who I think are doing their absolute best to limit health care for people, and in particular limit health care for women when it comes to reproductive rights. When they get sick, when they stub their friggin' toe, they like check themselves into Cedars-Sinai. And I wrote a joke on Twitter that said, Chris Christie has elected to have a safe and accessible abortion out of an abundance of caution. That is like a kind of slightly confused and layered joke. But the internet, what I realized was it was getting a lot of retweets and action, but people were thinking that I was saying it was a comment on Chris Christie's weight.
Oh, yeah.
Which was totally not my point. My point was just like, wouldn't it be classic if like if these men were availing themselves of something that they're working assiduously to deprive women of the access to? And but then I decided at some point to delete it because the response from everybody was like, ooh, coming in hot. But they were all retweeting it. But I was like, I don't want people to think that this is a fat joke. This is a Chris Christie is a evil hypocrite joke. So then I wrote a explanation of what my previous tweet was that I had deleted.
That's good.
That also got some traction. And I've been debating all the since I put that one up of taking that down because it also still references Chris Christie getting an abortion.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. The way you just described, I didn't see that. So I don't know if
I guess
if
one of us likes the other one's tweets and one of us is too busy playing Madden.
I sort by new, my friend. I sort by latest tweets first. Do you? I hate that it always defaults to the other thing. It defaults to like top tweets so that like things that are getting more juice will be at the top of your timeline. I don't like that. The thing I like about Twitter is just the immediacy and disposableness of a tweet. I prefer it to be like whatever's latest, show it to me on the top and then move on like a stream. This is weird that it's not weird that we're talking about Twitter. We talk about Twitter too much. But this morning I was thinking, I don't know why I was daydreaming about this, but I was thinking, remember when Twitter was mostly a place where people tweeted things like, lol, just signed up. Now what is Twitter all about? Like for a long time, a lot of tweets were just about, okay, I'm on this now, but what's Twitter?
Is this thing on?
That was so great. I miss that so much. I won't get into it because it's boring, but I just remember seeing like a little, somebody who I follow tweeted something that was, you know, just kind of a comment about the way men treat women kind of in business situations, kind of an observation. And I like her and I follow her, but for some reason I looked at the replies, and then one reply was, well, is it a chance that this person was on the spectrum? And then somebody jumped in, like just flaming them, saying you're being ableist and excuse me. And it was just like, wow, this one tweet that I was kind of like, oh, that's an interesting observation, especially, you know, for me as a man to think about. And then just immediately, though, three tweets in between three people who probably agree on, like, the Venn diagram between these three people who are commenting on this tweet or tweeting the original, like, they probably all have the same exact value system, but they're just like suddenly just kind of internet screaming at each other and just like, God damn, that happened so fast.
That
and
escalated it's quickly, this as they say.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, it's the website. I gave you an example before the show, too, yesterday of like two people that I totally respect, totally love. And this is going back a couple of years, but, you know, something Trump-related, and they start hacking at each other. And I'm just like, God, this is the website. This is the website. This is what it does.
Yeah, it's a complicated one because it's good that we are all – or people are trying to hold each other accountable on stuff, and people have a place to share their experience. So if somebody puts a bad tweet out, I'm putting bad sort of in quotes, or if somebody puts a tweet out that doesn't quite consider everybody's experience, there's a mechanism for saying, hey, here's another way to look at that. And I think that's a good thing overall. But a problem with Twitter as well is, and I've described it like this, I'm sure, on the show before, it's sort of like we're all just in this huge landfill, like trash heap, and we're rooting around in it. And the thing that – the way you demonstrate value on that website is to find a bad take or to find a take that doesn't include every possible option and experience and then hold it up. I got one! Like, so everyone's just like, you know, kind of cruising – not everyone, but a lot of people are sort of cruising Twitter, sort of trying to find – a gem in this pile of garbage, and that gem is calling somebody out. And I'm not saying cancel culture is, you know, is taking over the world or you can't say anything anymore, but I'm just saying it's an element of the website now. And sometimes it's helpful and informative, and sometimes it sort of it probably isn't helpful. And figuring out, you know, where the line is on that is, I guess, the daily journey of those of us who spend too much time on the accursed site.
So are we gonna listen to this Bogave interview or what?
You know, why don't you put a link to it in the newsletter? And
what I'll do is I'll put a link to that, and I'll put a link to our upcoming conversation, and then we'll let people compare once and for all who did the story better,
maybe
Walsh
the
and Burbank or Walsh and Bogave.
Maybe this week the newsletter can just be everything we talked about on our show, but then links to public radio shows doing it better.
Actually, that would be it.
I know, right? You're always
looking. If I felt like doing the work, that sounds amazing. Maybe I could.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more fresh air.
Oh, you got me.
Thank you, baby. Let's thank some donors of the day. Despite the fact that I have various glottal events, I blow the mic out. Despite the fact that Andrew forgets what radio show he's working on and produce segments for, despite all of these shortcomings, these generous people keep this show in business 7 days a week. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. They are people like An Vu of Portland, Oregon. Now, An may go by Anne. I have a friend who spells her name exactly the same way and goes by Anne. So Anne or An. Thank you. Thanks to Jenny Brown of Somerville, Massachusetts. Can you remind me, Andrew? I don't know if this was on our show or Press Play. How do we say Somerville?
Well, I mean, you pronounce it correctly. It's properly pronounced Somerville, but people there will jokingly say Somerville is a kind
I think what happened was for a while I thought that was the pronunciation, like
understood.
Kind of Worcester.
Yeah, because they always do that in New England.
But it was me putting an accent on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just going to go with Somerville, Massachusetts, where Jenny Brown is living, loving, and laughing. and also donating to TBTL.
Live, laugh, donate.
Is that a pillow God, we should, can you give know up? What? Could we, next year for the thon, could that be maybe, like, in whatever that font is?
Yes.
Live, laugh, donate. And then just, and then just in, like, a, what do you call that?
Are you talking about the font? Like, this kind
no,
of
I'm talking about... No, the thing that you just scan on your phone, like a QR code or something.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Like they're doing in restaurants now for the mm-hmm. menu.
Yeah.
So it's just live, laugh, donate, and then it's just a QR code for the TBTL donation page.
That's on scan the pillow. It on your yeah, I love
If anybody
it.
Comes into your house, they can just scan it and donate to TBTL.
That's a good idea.
Hey, Kay Constantino of Canfield, that is, Ohio. Thank you, Kay. Ryan Driscoll of Nampa, Idaho, rhymes with Tampa. Kate Dunkley of Chicago, Illinois. And then Catherine and Mark Bradford of beautiful Spokane, Washington. I got to get back over to Spokane, Washington, Andrew, part of the beautiful Inland Empire. In fact, you know, probably not that far from Nampa. I love that part of the world. I've been there in a while.
Wait, Spokane is considered the... The Inland Empire? I thought that's California. Is that goes beyond California?
I think there's a lot of places that actually kind of are described as the Inland Empire.
Oh.
I think as it pertains to Washington State, when I was growing up, you have to take – I think this is pretty typical. Did you do this in Ohio? You have to take, like, Ohio State history?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure I don't remember
it. As part of, like,
it.
Your
yeah.
curriculum, you know? Like,
yeah.
So I think, you know, state history is a – I don't know if it's a year of your life in school, but at some point – my younger days, I remember reading in some textbook about Spokane being described as the Inland Empire.
Hmm.
But you're right. There's an Inland Empire in California. There's a bunch of Inland Empires. I think it just means if you're off the coast, probably.
I'm going crazy here trying to figure out why Canfield, Ohio stands out to me so much. I feel like I went there as a kid. It's kind of it's southeast of Cleveland. I thought they were home of the world's largest bologna sandwich, but Googling that does not pull anything up. I think there's another place in Ohio that we went to on a Neil Zirker one-tank trip to get the world's biggest bologna sandwich. But apparently it's not Canfield. It does look beautiful, though. It looks like it was rated number 82 best place to live in America by Money Magazine, if I had that. I saw that a moment ago, if I'm remembering it correctly.
The Inland Northwest, historically and alternatively known as the Inland Empire, is a region of the American Northwest centered in the greater Spokane area.
All right. Well, all right. What do they got for bologna sandwiches?
It's Spokane was ranked the 84th most livable city in America.
Oh, wow.
By Canfield. Cryptocurrency Magazine.
Canfield just eked them out.
This is not on the list, and we don't need to talk about it. But the guy who invented the or at least owned the McAfee antiviral software, John McAfee, who is just a whole lot of trouble, got arrested in Spain yesterday for all kinds of tax evasion and crypto nonsense. I'm so personally just fascinated with that guy and his story. Did you follow any of that?
No.
Have you seen a picture of John McAfee?
I think I might have back in the day. I know he's like he's been kind of a problematic kook for a long time.
Yeah, I mean there is a much suspicion around the death of a neighbor of his where he was living in like some country outside of U.S. law enforcement's reach in like Central America and had a contentious relationship with one of his neighbors. That neighbor was found dead. There's a lot of speculation that he was responsible for it. Had this crazy, tried to escape from that country on like a small boat and was recently arrested in Spain. And I guess when I said Cryptocurrency Magazine, it made me think of John McAfee for some reason, who thankfully will now apparently be brought to some kind of justice, or at least will have to account for what he's been up to. Should not have gone to Spain. I don't understand people, whether it's Assange or McAfee, which by the way does sound like a high-end men's store. Assange and McAfee.
Yeah, it does.
That's where I get all of my cufflinks mm-hmm. and my monocles.
I'll bet you that store smells so good.
Yes.
Like cologne and leather.
Cologne, leather, and just a little bit of like cigar, but like a nice smelling cigar. Mm-hmm. Just manliness at Assange and McAfee. But I have to say, like, if I was a bad person who did bad things and I managed to escape the long arm of United States justice. I'm never going to a country where the long arm of U.S. justice can get me. I'm Ed Snowden all day and night. I'm showing up on some weird robot flat screen and giving TED Talks. Like, you know, that guy has it figured out. Don't leave Russia.
Right.
Like,
right.
You're not going to arrest Edward Snowden in London because he wanted to go to, like, freaking Trafalgar Square. Homeboy knows to stay where they can't get him.
Well, let me spin this back to why I was distracted a moment ago when you asked me if I know who John McAfee is, because I have found the bologna sandwich spot that I was referring to, and I'm wondering, like, I might get extradited for this. Of course, I wouldn't be extradited. I would just be arrested in Ohio. GNR Tavern in Waldo, Ohio is a must stop you're in the area. You look up where Waldo is. For more than 50 years, okay. It's been the village's best spot to eat. They have these pictures here. The legendary sandwich includes thick sliced bologna. So these aren't like a bunch of little slices. It's like sliced thick like a hamburger bologna, sweet sandwich pickles, onions, and American cheese served on a hamburger bun. I'm reading from onlyinyourstate.com/Ohio/world's. Best fried bologna, no joke. And I would take everything but the cheese on these things, and it's like really like those cheap store bought hamburger buns, which in this case makes it look all the more delicious to me, with a side of onion rings. And it says this is a modest, seat yourself, no frills tavern, home to the best bologna sandwich in the world. So anyway, check it out.
Well,
if you're
I googled
Waldo,
where's
Ohio.
Waldo, and I'm looking at this picture, and
now
I can't
find
it.
I didn't get your joke, but now I get it. It was a Where's Waldo joke.
Speaking of fried meats, there was a commercial that came on the TV yesterday that Carrie and I were watching. And oh, maybe whatever. It doesn't matter when the commercial was on. The point is, we were watching it, and it was for Spam. But what I thought was interesting was they spent the whole commercial not telling you it was Spam.
Oh, have I? No, like, how does this go? I don't think I've seen this.
It was just, it's like people are cutting what looks like a ham product, and they're frying it, and they're eating it, and Carrie and I both looked at each other and go, is this a commercial for ham? And then I said, I bet it's Spam, but they don't want to tell you it's Spam. And sure enough, literally the last thing in the commercial is they tell you it's Spam. And it's actually kind of clever, because what they're trying to do is make you want to eat this thing. They know that for a lot of people, Spam is such a bad rep. For other people, people love it because they grew up eating it, or maybe they grew up somewhere where it was eaten, like in Hawaii or on a U.S. military base. But it was funny that the whole commercial was built around basically not telling you what the product was, so as to not to not give you a bad opinion of the product until you'd seen it being fried up 8 different ways.
Yeah, well, it's come a long way, Spam, as far as its reputation, because it was nothing but a punchline for me and my family growing up. Like, I didn't even know what Spam was. I only knew it as a joke and that nobody really ate it. But, I mean, that really, I think, now that I'm an adult, I think it speaks to our provincialness a little bit. Because – and also, like, you think of Spam as, like, the canned Spam. And I think, generally speaking, my family wasn't huge into canned meats. But, like, how could we as a family be sitting down with mouthfuls of bologna sandwich making fun of Spam? You know
totally.
What I mean? We ate so much bologna, yet we would joke about Spam.
Spam was definitely a go-to for, like, low-quality, weird food, you know, meat-related product. But, yeah, I mean, it's in a lot of, like, Hawaiian cooking and I think in Philippines as well, or, like, Filipino food. A lot of food, again, where there was military bases and there was a lot of Spam being consumed, and then it got worked into the cuisine. It's, you know, it's a very well-loved thing. I don't know if I've ever – another hummingbird coming up, by the way. Now I'm just worried he's going to just crap all over the place. I think that was in the no point yesterday when a hummingbird pulled up to my hummingbird feeder and just dropped a giant deuce. But really did some PR damage for hummingbirds in my mind, just FYI.
Is Spam – okay, we got to get on with the show, because I don't want this to just be another me just Googling all show thing. But I am curious. Is Spam always in cans? Like, for example, like I like when I go back in the good old days, more than half a year ago when we went to restaurants, Phyllis and I would like to go to Kona Kitchen, not far from where I live, one of our favorite places. And sometimes we'd go and have a business lunch there, and we'd usually I never ordered it myself, but Phyllis would often order the spam, and we would share that as an app, and it's great. I mean, it's fantastic. When you're buying spam for a situation like that, it's probably not canned, right? Like, maybe they got the bad reputation because in stores it's sold in cans. I have no idea. I'm just asking the questions.
I don't know enough about it to give you an informed answer. I do know, based on the Wikipedia page, that beginning in 1940, Spam sponsored George Burns and Gracie Allen on their radio program. I know that during World War II, Spam was not only eaten but was incorporated into many other aspects of the war. It was used as they greased their guns with it. They used the cans for scrap metal. It was so prominent that Uncle Sam was nicknamed Uncle Spam at one point. Other terms influenced by the product's name include the European Invasion Fleet or the Spam Fleet. Furthermore, the United Service Organization, USO, that's like the entertainment, you know, that's like Bob Hope swinging a golf club in front of the soldiers, that was called the Spam Circuit. So when they'd bring Marilyn Monroe or whoever else out there, they were on the Spam Circuit. Also, other companies have tried to make their imitation Spam products, including Walmart makes something called Great Value Luncheon Meat, which I'm looking at a cross-section of it. It's just basically Spam.
I don't like that. I am on the Wikipedia page now, too, and I'm just scrolling down. They have all kinds of photos of Spam prepared all different ways, and I want to eat every one of these photos. They have a picture of Spam Musubi, which I saw in Hawaii, and I don't think I ever ended up buying it. They had it in this grocery store, right? I'm sure it's very popular in Hawaii, but you know, it's like it's Spam on a bed of rice with like a ribbon of seaweed wrapping it together, like Musubi.
Yeah.
And I kept seeing it in the grocery store and thinking, this is on our last vacation. Like, I'm gonna buy you before this vacation ends, and then here I am back in Seattle, potentially never traveling again, and that never touched my lips.
You know, if I didn't have a 1 pound of orecchiette, of toasted orecchiette in my gut right now, I would also, that would actually, believe it or not, that would sound good to me just because of the saltiness. I just like things that are very salty. Let me just, of course, how we're talking about Spam, and we're not talking about Spam-a-Lot, right? Which is like a Monty Python musical or something. Also, they have this. They have a whole sketch called Spam about a restaurant that only serves Spam. Take a listen to this.
This is Monty Python again?
Yeah.
Morning.
Morning.
What you got then?
Well, there's egg and bacon, egg, sausage and bacon, egg and Spam.
Oh,
egg, bacon,
this.
And Spam. Egg, bacon, sausage, and Spam. Spam, bacon, sausage, and Spam. Spam, egg, Spam, Spam, bacon, and Spam. Spam, 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 egg, and Spam. Spam, 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 Spam. Baked beans, Spam, 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 and Spam. Oh, lobster thermidor, crevettes with a mayonnaise sauce, garnished with truffle pate brandy, and a pie on top, and Spam.
Were you a Monty Python head at all as a kid?
You know, I was going to tell you, and if you want to use this as a transition, you might, but I do remember the skit, and I remember it from a cassette tape that my friends, or the guys who I wanted to be my friends in eighth grade, eighth grade was rough for me. I was a new kid at a school where everybody was graduating after that class, after eighth grade, so it was a little difficult to make friends, despite being super likable. But there were
called you old bologna pockets. You always had 2 to 3 slices of bologna in your pocket.
Yeah, but you know what? Dogs loved me. But there were these three guys who I thought were really cool, and they introduced me to Monty Python by giving me a cassette of Monty Python skits, an audio cassette, and I thought that Monty Python was just a radio skit. I didn't realize that much of this audio was actually had visuals that went along with it. And these were the same guys who got me into Led Zeppelin.
And I bet that you were delighted by that cassette tape, even though it was missing like 70% of the important information in terms of visual content.
Yeah, I loved it. I even wonder, I mean, how long, because I mean, I think I knew they made movies, but I don't think I realized that these skits I was hearing were actually just the audio ripped from basically the TV. Now, they were actually sold. I mean, I think that these things actually were sold as audio cassettes because they worked in that way. It wasn't like – I can't remember any of these guys' names. One of them might have been a Brad. I'm not saying that Brad, like, you know, ripped this off of the TV. It was a real product, but, like, I just had no idea that there was visuals backing it.
I had a real moment with the movie The Life of Brian. Like, me and Peter Williams rented that one night, and I thought it was the funniest thing that had ever been made. I actually still think there's some really amazing moments in that film. I was obsessed with The Life of Brian. I never watched the TV show or anything.
You know, I gotta say, you know, I think I should – let's be the podcast that makes fun of Monty Python because – or is too cool for Monty Python because I'm sure that wouldn't rankle any of our listeners. It's not beloved and cherished and protected. But I do think that me liking Monty Python – like the most I ever liked it was when I thought it was audio only and it was something special that these guys who I liked, you know, were playing for me or wanting me to get into. Like, that was a really special experience, and I think a lot of people might have that experience with Monty Python where it's like you feel like you're being let into this club even all these decades later. But like if you're a kid, especially kind of a nerd, maybe a nerd who likes comedy kid, and you suddenly just quote unquote discover this, you think you're really discovering something or being let into this secret underground. That was probably the most I ever liked it because, I mean, the movies are good, but like I think I like them more in theory than I, you know what I mean? Like I'm not tempted. You might mention another movie or TV show on the show and I would be like, oh man, as soon as we're done with the show, I'm going to sit down and watch that. I don't really get that with Monty Python. And I'm not saying that again just to be like, I'm not trying to rummage around in the transfer station looking for the ugliest hot take so I can say, here, look, I found it. But that's just my relationship.
Got one! I want to just, I haven't watched this scene since I was like in high school, but the part from Life of Brian that always stuck with me was the scene where Jesus is talking and he's saying, blessed are the meek, but the guys are too far away to hear him. So they're kind of playing a game of telephone. Did he say blessed are the Greek? Like, let's just listen. I don't know if this holds up, but let's just see how this goes.
How blessed are those of gentle spirit. They shall have the earth for their possession. How blessed are those who hunger and thirst to see right prevail. They shall be satisfied. How blessed are those whose hearts are pure.
So these guys are way in the back.
They shall see God.
Getting very confused.
Speak up!
Quiet, Mom.
Well, I can't hear a thing. Let's go to stoning.
You can go to a stoning any time.
Oh, come on, Brian!
Will you be quiet?
Don't pick your nose.
I wasn't picking my nose, I was scratching.
You was picking it while he was talking to that lady.
I wasn't.
Leave it alone, give it a rest.
Do you mind? I can't hear a word he's saying.
Don't you do you mind me. I was talking to my husband.
Well, go and talk to him somewhere else. I can't hear a bloody thing.
Don't you swear at my wife.
I was only asking her to shut up so he can hear what he's saying, big nose.
Don't you call my husband Big Nose?
Well, he has got a big nose. Could you be quiet, please? What was that? I don't know. It's too busy talking to Big Nose.
I think it was Blessed Are the Cheesemakers.
What's so special about the cheesemakers?
Well, obviously, it's not meant to be taken literally. It refers to any manufacturers of dairy products.
See, if you haven't been going on, we'd have heard that, Big Nose.
Hey, say that once more, I'll smash your bloody face in.
Oh. Better keep listening. Might be a bit about Blessed Are the Big Noses.
Oh, lay off him.
Oh, you're not so bad yourself, Conkface. Where are you two from? Nose City?
One more time, mate. I'll take you to fucking cleaners.
Language! And don't pick your nose.
I wasn't going to pick my nose. I'm going to thump him.
You hear that? Blessed are the Greek. The Greek.
Mm. Well, apparently, he's going to inherit the earth.
Did anyone catch his name?
You're not
going
to thump anybody.
I have to say, it's a pretty funny premise to me, just the idea of, like, the Sermon on the Mount or whatever it is, and then just, like, what if you just really got the totally wrong message, the wrong takeaway from that, just due to acoustics? That was actually funnier to me than I expected.
Yeah, you know, I do wonder if, and let me just keep on digging deeper in case I haven't insulted Monty Python fans, but I do wonder if one of the things that kind of turns me off is, because that was funny, like I can't remember exactly what got me lolling in that, but that's legit funny. I think that there is such a culture around it, and I don't know if this is still the case for kids growing up today. I kind of doubt it. But of our generation, of course, you always go through a phase, or at least as a lot of people I know went through a phase where either you're the person who's obsessed with it or you know the people who are obsessed with it. And everybody does the Monty Python voice and imitations. Mm-hmm. And they do the whole,
I'm not dead yet.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of like that. That can kind of take the fun out of it by the time you're 43 listening to it on a podcast.
Okay, do we go with Led Zeppelin here, or do we go with Freezing Your Garbage? I just got to announce to everyone, I don't think Venice is going to make the list today. The scoop with Venice is they built these crazy gates that keep the water out, but the weird part is we are going to do the Venice story, but very quickly. There are basically two parts of Venice that tend to flood a lot, and one is St. Mark's Square, which is like the most famous part of Venice, and then one is the Rialto section. And what I found interesting was they're going to put these gates up when the water levels are coming in at a certain a level, but they're not going to put the gates up. Like basically, those two places are still going to flood for most of the time. They're just choosing. I don't know what if it costs. I couldn't find in the article why they wouldn't just leave the gates up all the time if there's some sort of environmental consequence or if it's expensive. But they've been building these gates since 1984.
Whoa.
It's called the Moses Project. And the other day was the first time they ever actually tried to use them to really hold back a flood, and it totally worked. But then the crazy part of the story was the next day the water came in at a lower level. They didn't put the gates up, and the two low neighborhoods in Venice just flooded anyway. So it was like the next day everybody was in like knee-deep water in the two of the most popular tourist destinations in Venice. So I don't really – I need more details on that. Maybe some of our listeners are experts in that, and they can explain why they're not going to just put those gates up all winter and keep the water out of Venice. But okay, that being handled, what do you want to start with, Led Zeppelin or Frozen Garbage?
Honestly, my – the frozen garbage is the most interesting to me. I want to talk about that because I don't know the story, and I want you to tell me the story, Lukey. But I feel like if we don't do Zeppelin today, then we probably won't do it at all because it'll get older and older, and it's kind of time-pegged, and I know that you pulled a lot of tape for it.
Well, it was just two songs. And actually, you know what? We don't have to spend a ton of time on the Zeppelin thing. Other than I just wanted to – you've heard the tape because you produced a segment on this, but maybe the listeners haven't. I just wanted to play these two songs. One is a song called Taurus by a band Spirit that was fronted by a guy named Randy California, who drowned in 1997. Just side note to the whole thing. And somebody as part of his estate, which I find it interesting that it's always the estate, it seems.
Yeah.
It was like Marvin Gaye's estate.
Yeah.
And look, peace and love, right? But like, it feels like somebody just trying to make money off of some relative who is, I mean, if Marvin Gaye wants to go after Robin Thicke, that's one thing. Or if Randy California wants to go after Led Zeppelin, and who knows, maybe Randy California, was frustrated about this and maybe he brought the lawsuit in the first place, or he always wished a lawsuit was brought. I don't know. But it's like when you're the you're like the great nephew of somebody who did something, it just feels a little bit, I don't know. It just feels a little opportunistic to me, if I'm being totally honest.
Yeah. And, generally speaking, when we talk about these music copyright cases, and I might be on the wrong side of history here because I'm not a musician, but it just does seem that at the DNA of music is one musician, one artist taking inspiration from another artist, and that manifests in all kinds of ways. But it's always been that way. I mean, it's not just like hip-hop sampling. It's going back to like folk music, like the original, just like sharing songs and then tweaking songs. And I could write a verse for that song, Don. You know how it all goes. And so,
sure. In our Daily Donovan reference.
So I always feel like I'm taking the side of not – I'm always taking the side that the lawsuit should be thrown out. And that's probably wrong, because maybe that's screwing over musicians who work hard at their craft and then, you know, they get overlooked. That's no good. But generally speaking, especially like you say, if it's not the artist themselves saying, hey, listen, this is why I think it damages me. But if instead it's part of the family, or it's somebody who just wants to make sure the precedent is set, or if it's like a manager, like I hate that.
Well, like, I mean, it seems like the bigger problem is it often, or at least in the early days of pop music in this country, involved white artists stealing the work of black artists recording, you know, Elvis recording Hound Dog, which was, I think, originally by like Big Mama Thornton. Now, I don't know how the publishing stuff works, so maybe Big Mama Thornton and or her estate or whoever wrote that song got lots and lots of money from Elvis popularizing the song. My guess is, knowing how history has worked towards marginalized groups in this country, I'm assuming Big Mama Thornton got jack shit out of that. But that's like seems like the kind of, if we want to go after the theft of creativity, let's start with white people stealing shit from black people.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, right. Which
get into the what was the example you just raised a second ago? One of the biggest music copyright cases of the past decade or two.
The Blurred Lines one?
Blurred Lines, yeah.
And well, that was also Pharrell got sued, who is black. So.
Oh, that's true, right? I was only thinking of the white guy.
SBC. Thicke. Shit be complicated. Yeah. And apparently Robin Thicke wrote that. I mean, not that Robin Thicke. Look, if you want to argue that that song used too much of the Marvin Gaye stuff, fine. But it was funny because then after that, it was like Robin Thicke was sort of like not toxic, but it was like, his music was kind of failing. He was in financial trouble. It was like nobody wanted to be associated with Robin Thicke. And I was like, that's a pretty fall from grace over just like getting together with Pharrell and jamming out on a song that then lost in court. Mm-hmm. But now he's one of the judges on The Masked Singer. So everything's coming up Robin Thicke. All right. So here we go. Starting with Stairway to Heaven, as if we even need to play it. But here we go. Everybody knows that. The Supreme Court, by the way, declined to hear this case, meaning the case is effectively over now. And there was a lot of legalese around the various sort of, I guess, appearances in court that this case made. You know, the person from Randy, California's estate would lose, then they would like appeal it to a different court. There was one point where they had to bring a guitar player into the court to play both songs. Which must have been kind of a funny, weird scene. Okay, so that's Stairway to Heaven. Here is the song Taurus by Spirit. At some point, a judge ruled that these were not immediately recognizable as being similar, like to your ear. What do you think?
I think that those opening notes are very, very similar. They're very similar. I just don't know the law. And like I say, like I just wish we lived in a world where, and I've been kind of Googling too to see like, did Randy California ever specifically speak out on this? And people have gone down some pretty deep rabbit holes trying to figure that out and read between the lines. And he apparently feels like he was ripped off, but never went into detail publicly or on the record about this. And so I just don't know if he was upset about it. I would just prefer to live in a world where it's kind of like, yeah, this was the type of music, like this type of music was very new right then, and people were inspired. I mean, clearly the rest of the song is not exactly the same. Like,
I think they're pretty fundamentally different because, like, Stairway goes, I'm not going to just sing it, but the last note of the kind of little finger, like, you know, the plucking goes, it's almost like the Vanilla Ice, not supposedly not ripping off David Bowie and Queen because of the like dun 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 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, listen to this. So Stairway to Heaven goes, well, I'll just play it again. Whoops, let's go back to the beginning here. So Stairway kind of goes up. So it feels like it goes, it's sort of going up at the end of that plucking, where his spirit is going down. Mm-hmm. Also, by the way, no offense to anyone involved, but those are like, what, as soon as you start learning guitar, and as soon as you get even like 2% proficient, you start doing that. I don't know if it's called a walk down or what, but like, I thought I wrote a song that sounded very similar to both of these songs, because it's just the process of finger picking and then just moving your fingers around in a fairly logical fashion on the fretboard.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the first thing you start to do when you get a little bit of guitar skills going.
Yeah, I mean, of course, by the time you picked up a guitar and started noodling around, these songs were already established by a couple of decades, especially the Zeppelin one being so famous. So that also influences, and I don't know who your friends were, who you were playing with. But, I mean, I can definitely hear why somebody might say, hey, that's very similar. But again, to me, I don't think that Led Zeppelin's fame, and this maybe totally misses the point, I just don't think that Led Zeppelin's fame is because of this riff. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
If you're a lesser known, lesser loved band, and Spirit was like a hippie band in its own right, they have some album that I used to listen to that has, I don't think this song is on it, but it's like some sort of, it's like one of those hippie dimensionals, like the third dimension of Dr. Space mm-hmm. Boots or something. I can't think of the name of the album off the top of my head.
A show title.
Well, do you know the song in all of your reading about this? Do you know the song I'm talking about? Spirit album. All right, what did I say?
I'm writing on the third dimension of Dr. Space Boots. Don't interrupt me, please.
Okay. And the actual album I was trying to think of was The 12 Dreams of Dr. Sardonicus. So actually, I might like mine better. I think that's their most famous record, no?
I believe you that it's their most well-known. I've just never heard of it. And I just love the third... The third dimension of Dr. Space Boots.
I'm actually kind of, I see where there's a number in there. There's a doctor in there. The doctor starts with an S. But anyway, so it's just one of those things where if you're a less popular band, and I could see having a chip on your shoulder, or if you're a fan of that band or what have you, but I just don't think that you can say all of that Led Zeppelin success should be mine. Or, I mean, I guess what they want is a writing credit. Isn't that usually what this comes down to? They Spirit or Daniel or Derek California. Yeah, what's his name?
Randy
California.
Randy Nevada.
Randy California wants the estate. Wants
well, Randy
credit.
California's estate. They want some of that sweet, sweet moolah.
Yeah.
They want to get publishing credit because then they would be entitled to a share of all of the revenue from Stairway to Heaven, which I would imagine is a lot of money.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen because the United States Supreme Court declined to hear the case. All right.
Wait, hold on. Not all right. I want to play one for you. Do you have – I don't think we've ever talked about this, but one of these things that did drive me crazy sort of was you know the Elastica song Connection? I'll play a little bit of it here. Do you know this?
Yeah.
Okay. It's going to kick in here in a second. So loud. Okay, so that is a song that I love. That's like perfect 90s, you know, Andrew pop music. But all of my hipster friends when I got to college were mad because that apparently rips off this Wire song called Three Girl Rumba. And it is so close.
Oh, shit.
How do you rule on this?
Well, again, the Elastica song goes dun 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 dun, and that dun 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 is different. You know what I mean? Like, probably that's like, I don't know what that is, but that's like an an E into an A or something. But it's like, I mean, this is where these things get tricky, because it's like there's like a finite number of chords. Now, I mean, the rhythm, like the way it's being played, the way that that amp is being used or whatever it is, like it's clearly a very similar sound. But the idea of like E to A to E to A to D to E, it's just kind of like, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like there are only so many chords in the world.
Yes. And also, like, and that's maybe this is a power out for here. This is why I kind of like the direction things are going with TikTok and things before TikTok, but especially TikTok now. It's all based on like kind of a collective mind, right? Like it's almost like the creative Borg. Like one person creates something and then, well, I'm going to take a piece of it. And it's all like nobody's like, hey, but that was mine first. And maybe the app does a good job of linking back to the original content with the like original audio function, which I think is really cool. And sometimes I like crawling back into it. But like I like this idea of, yeah, we're all, oh, you did this, let me riff on that.
You know what's funny is, and we need to talk about frozen garbage here, but it all comes back to, I was talking about, you know, sort of white people ripping off black artists. And this stupid thing that I played today referencing the Venice Story.
Bring me a little water now. Bring me a little water, Sylvie.
Is the perfect example of the just Borg memification to the point where it's almost in this, where it's been so far removed from its original context. So I was looking at TikTok and I saw this video of a young woman, maybe in her 20s, and she's sitting on her knees and she's lip syncing this sound that I just played.
Bring me a little water now. Bring me a little water, Sylvie.
And she's got this like a piece of paper or something on her finger. So her finger is kind of extra long and she has a backwards hat on. And I remember seeing it and not understanding any context and it having like 5 million views and being like, what am I freaking looking at? So then I have to like go on the hunt for what it is. It's this guy, I think his name is James Charles, who's like, I don't really know what his claim to fame is, but I get the sense that he's like a very influential TikTok makeup person, maybe. And he is like somewhere in public and he's down on his knees. He's basically singing this. I don't know why he's singing this to people, but it was like a clip. My guess is it's some kind of a fan event and I don't know what exactly he's doing, right? But that's him. This is the sound of this guy, James Charles. But the song itself is, I guess, become popular lately because it's originally a lead belly song. Like about like Lead Belly's uncle's wife was named Sylvie, and his uncle would, but when he was out working in the fields, would call to Sylvie to bring him some water. But then like a cappella people have gotten into Bring Me a Little Water, Sylvie, like more recently. So there's these like YouTube channels of people singing the Bring Me a Little Water, Sylvie song, which then this Jeffrey Charles dude is singing on his knees. And then I see this 22-year-old girl impersonating Jeffrey Charles. And that's how it comes into my life. By the way, that's better than the Jeffrey Charles version.
Bring me a little water
now. I'd say about equal. Why was her finger extended?
Because I guess just Jeffrey Charles guy, he's doing a thing with his hand and his index finger looks kind of elongated. Happens to look long. But again, these were all things I had to decode and figure out from. This is my life. And I know that in these unreasonable times, people have way bigger problems than trying to understand TikTok memes, but it takes up a lot of my brain space.
Oh, my God. I don't even know if I can't really get into this, but let me just tell you, I was on Instagram with a friend who I hadn't talked to them in a while.
Oh, Dr. Space Boots?
Dr. Space Boots, or I was texting with him. I don't know what it was, but it came up there like, we needed you the other day. And I don't know if they needed me to confuse things or if they accidentally think I'm into stuff, but LACMA posted, you know, the museum posted a whoever is in charge of their Instagram account posted a old drawing of a bunch of like it's like a pencil style drawing of a bunch of men in a crowd The year, I could actually even tell you this just to give you a sense of things. I think this is from 1912. And the caption is, "Catch me acting sus in electrical." And then they also put the caption on the thing, on the photo itself, that says, "There is one imposter among us." And my friend said that she was on a phone call with a mutual friend, and they would not let each other get off the phone until they sussed out exactly what was going on, because none of these references meant anything to them at all, and they couldn't figure it out. And they're all about my age, and it has to do with that game Among Us, or is it Amongst Us? I think it's Among Us. She wouldn't tell me the answer, so I had to put it together myself. But it's like, there's this video game that's been around for a few years, and it's like a tablet game that's kind of like that game Murder or Murderer, essentially. Like, it's a online social game. Are you familiar with this whole story? They were going to release a sequel to it. This was headline news a couple of weeks ago. They were going to release a sequel to it, but then they decided not to because the original one is too popular, so they're just going to pump that up. And that was like headline news. Have you been following any of this?
No.
Anyway, world.
I'm looking at this, though. So is the pencil drawing or the charcoal or whatever it is that LACMA posted, "There is one imposter among us," that is a piece of art, I assume, and then they're sort of memifying it or playing off of that kind of meme?
Yeah, so the actual, and I think if you scroll down, I think they do give you the actual art. It's like the second, it's like this, they tag it, "Catch me acting sus and electrical." But then they do say it's Ernst Barlock, Group of Men, 1912, lithograph on wove paper. You know, like I said, pencil-y. So, but that didn't really answer the question, "Catch me acting sus and electrical." Like, well, what is electrical? I mean, acting suspicious, you can figure that out, but I Googled that to make sure that I had the slang right. So acting sus is like slang for acting suspicious. But what is electrical? Well, electrical is apparently a room in this game. And the game is you got to like figure out like the game. Oh, I said before, it's like Murder or Murderer. I'm not sure what it is, but a bunch of people play and some people are real and some people are imposters, and you got to suss out who's the imposter. And so at some point it went viral, "Catching me acting sus and electrical," because that's one phase of the game. Anyway,
I have to say I'm on LACMA's Instagram and I like what they're doing. It's actually kind of clever. Like I'm just looking at, you know, they're taking clearly some pieces of work I'm imagining are in their collection, or maybe they're not, but then kind of putting a lulzy millennial spin on it. One is like a sort of a skeleton is looking in on a kind of looks like a traditional Japanese, a group of like traditional maybe samurai or something. And they've written over the skeleton, "Spooky memes I've been saving since last year." And then the people, the sort of Japanese looking characters are called the group chat. The idea being like, you got your spooky meme, you've been waiting to deploy to your group chats and things like that. One is this kind of still life of a bunch of food, and it's like, is butter a carb? I'm kind of here for this. I mean, I would never have in a million years known "Catch me acting sus in electrical."
Yeah.
I mean, that is, did you guys have to Google it?
Well,
how did you guys finally get to the bottom of it?
I did such a terrible job of telling the story because I was trying to squeeze it in, and I was also trying to remember the details on the fly. But
have
essentially,
you ever heard this show, Andrew? Have we ever squeezed anything in history?
But so I have two mutual friends, and apparently a couple of weeks ago, one of them sent the other one this thing and said, "Do you know what this is about?" And then they got on the phone and apparently spent, I'm going to guess, a great deal of time trying to Google things and figure it out for themselves. After the fact, one of them sent it to me and said, "Can you figure this out? We were thinking about you while we were on this phone call." And then I spent, I'm going to say it took me, I mean, it felt like an hour, but I was just sitting here by myself, not trying to talk to anyone while I was doing it. So it probably took me, I'll bet you it took me at least 20 to 30 minutes to figure out all the ins and outs of that.
I like "Catch me acting sus." I think that's kind of, I'll probably be integrating that into a tweet later.
Very seamlessly.
As is my, as is dead ass, I'm going to do that, Andrew.
Yeah, it's just going to be real organic. That's what I'm going to love about it.
No cap. No cap, Andrew. All right. Speaking of things that do have a cap or at least a lid, let's talk about frozen garbage. Today, Andrew, for the low price of $199, you can get on the waiting list for a garbage can that freezes your garbage. It is called Petal, P-E-T-A-L. It is $199 right now. If you buy it in the, if you're sort of, it's not quite a Kickstarter, but you know, if you get in on the ground floor, apparently the cost is going to go up to $350 after this initial phase. It was invented by a husband and wife, and it plugs in and it basically freezes your garbage. And the idea is that you will not have to smell the stench of dirty diapers or banana peels or anything else that might be rotting in your garbage can because it is all frozen in a block. Would you ever consider purchasing such a thing?
Well, no. I mean, I guess the diapers, there's an argument for that, but usually the things that smell in garbage are food. And maybe I'm just wrong because I live in anarchist Seattle, and there's nothing more anarchist than composting. But like with citywide composting, we shouldn't be freezing our garbage and throwing it in a landfill, right? We should be taking those banana peels and anything else that's really stinky in your garbage can is probably food and should be composted. I guess it doesn't apply to diapers, but that's also a phase. Like chances are, like if you have a kid with diapers or a couple of kids with diapers, like you're going to spend $350 for this garbage can that you're going to need just during the diaper phase.
They go heavy on the diaper stuff. In there's like a, you know, they made a infomercial type video, and it's very diaper centric. And maybe that's a thing. You know, I haven't had lived with a small kid in, well, about 24 years, so it's been a while. But maybe that is a real thing. Like the diapers, you know, kind of not smelling so great if you got a bunch of them. I know that when I'm at the dog park and Rudy poops, and I have to put it in a bag and drop it in the giant container, the giant garbage can where everyone's dropping their bag dog poop. I dread that so much.
Oh yeah.
I was so happy the other day that I was at least wearing a mask when it happened. I was like, I should bring a mask. Even once we get a vaccine and everyone's okay again, I should still wear a mask to the dog park just for that moment because it's foul. But maybe the diaper thing is a big deal. The other thing about the infomercial for this was like, you could either take your garbage out every day, but who has time for that? And I thought, most people, right? Like, yeah. I mean, again, maybe if you live in a sixth floor walk-up, maybe if you have young children and you're very, very much harried and it's just all you can do to kind of, you know, just get through the day. I'm not trying to act like it's easy for everyone, but I mean, taking the garbage out once a day seems kind of standard to me.
Yeah, or when it fills up. Like, I'm not taking the garbage out every day or at whatever frequency I do it because it smells. I mean, actually, that's not entirely true. Every now and then, if one of us was cooking, and especially like if we were cooking chicken and like the packaging from the raw chicken is in the garbage can, like I will smell that, like if it sits in there for a little bit, and I hate that smell, and so I'll take out the garbage. But mostly I'm taking out the garbage because it's full, and freezing it doesn't really change that at all, unless this thing is huge, and who wants a huge garbage can?
I wonder if part of what they're saying is, because I'm watching some more videos on this, and maybe the idea is you throw all the stinky stuff in here, but not the regular garbage. Maybe the idea is, because I'm watching the video and it's like they're throwing in a diaper, a pineapple, like a banana peel, a dog poop. Well, some of those need to go to different places. You're right. If you're throwing in like the top of a pineapple, that's something that should go in food waste, but you can't put a diaper in food waste. So
no.
I don't know what they're exactly proposing. They're very big on pointing out that even though it's plugged in, it only uses as much power as running one load of laundry a month. And also, you can, I guess when you're done with this thing, they will send you a shipping label and you can ship the whole thing back so that you don't end up throwing out a garbage can like you had to the other day.
Oh, really?
They will recycle it. But on the other hand, that's a pretty good deal for them. They're like, when you're done with it, you can send it back to us and then we'll reharvest the parts and make a new garbage can out of it, which again, is a smaller carbon footprint probably, but also kind of a good deal for them to get their garbage can back.
Wait, I'm confused. They're getting their own garbage can back, or they're taking your old garbage can because you don't know what to do with it because you bought their new Whiz Bang one?
They're taking the Whiz Bang one back. So they will, if you were to buy one of these and then your little baby were to grow up and not crap their pants anymore. If you decided for some reason, I don't want this, I don't need this, you could go on the website and they will send you out a shipping label and they will take it away for free. The thing you paid $200 to $350 for, they will free of charge take it back to their plant and reprocess it and send it out to somebody else or at least some parts of it.
I just had a depressing thought. I am closer at this stage in my life to having to worry about my own smelly diapers than any theoretical child of mine. Hmm. Think about that.
How about that?
How about
I'm
that?
I'm considering that in my own life. Yeah, probably so. I don't know what my plan is on that whole phase of life. I'm hoping that I am just like relatively healthy and my things are relatively functional in my body. And then right as they stop being so, I hope that I have a very peaceful sleep and maybe don't wake up, you know? Like, there's no perfect, you know, there's no getting out of this life alive, and there's also no perfect crime, like, but I am not looking forward to that phase of my life, and I'm hoping that I don't experience it. Now, it's unlikely that I'll just be the 195-year-old that's not shitting their pants, so maybe I just have to not be 95.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, these are things that human beings deal with, and, you know, I remember one time on after these, and I'm not trying to be a snowflake here, but I am trying to, you know, be conscientious of people who are listening. I remember one time, you know, on After These Messages way early on, in one of our first shows, Genevieve was kind of like, we both were, I'm sure, making fun of a commercial for like the stick you use if you are in a position where you can't wipe yourself in the traditional way, right?
Is there really a commercial for that?
Yeah, or like an infomercial or something. I can't remember what it's called. And I think we might have even had a guest on who wanted to like kind of talk about infomercials. It was his obsession. And so a lot of infomercials are stuff like that. So I don't think we spent tons of time on it, but obviously just laughed at it like, haha, poop stick. And then somebody wrote in and it's like, that really sucks for me. Like, I'm disabled. I got to use one of those. And you guys are just like yucking it up. And I just want to listen to some entertainment and not feel terrible because of my situation. And I mean, just the law of averages says that there are people in our audience, too, who probably maybe have to wear adult diapers. I don't know. And so me saying that was maybe, I don't know. When I say something like that, maybe I'm going for a cheap laugh. But also, to be fair, it's literally something I've thought about like forever. Right. I mean, I think about aging a lot and probably in a morbid way that isn't that I probably shouldn't. But yeah, the idea of aging has always bothered me. Here I am 43. Like I think when I was a kid, the idea of being 43 scared the hell out of me. Like my mom will still remind me like my plan when I was a teenager, if you asked me, I said, oh, yeah, I'm just ending it all at 30. And I'm not saying that to be light about suicide, but I really, truly, as a little kid, as a teenager, thought that life was basically over at 30, and I would tell my mom that, like, I'm not living past 30. That's my plan. And I was being earnest about that. Well, obviously, you grow up. I wouldn't go back and be 30 right now. I like being 43, and that's something to remember. But I think I've always been super afraid of getting old, and the body, losing various functions is a huge part of it. I was in the drugstore the other day and I was looking for something and I was in the aisle that had adult diapers and I was looking at the packaging on it because they were like kind of making people look very kind of sporty and I thought it was an interesting pose sort of. But I wasn't just sitting there laughing like, heh, 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 people have to use it. I was just staring at it thinking, I wonder when, you know, right.
I don't think you brought it up in this episode of the show, I don't think you brought it up as a punchline. I think you were like seriously saying it's a thing you think about. So I don't think that was minimizing anyone's experience.
Yeah.
Now the SNL sketch, oops, I crap my pants. Maybe is.
I forgot about that.
Let's pretend this iced tea is human feces, which I have to say is one of the greatest lines in the history of SNL. They pour an entire pitcher of iced tea into the adult diaper to sort of indicate its absorbent qualities.
And I don't remember that. I wouldn't have even remembered it except you brought it up, and I do remember that line. But I also wonder how much of that, I don't know why I'm trying to defend that, but like I wonder how much of that is actually making fun of marketing, actually, and not people who have to wear adult diapers.
Right. No, so. I think you're right because, and if I remember right, it's like they're playing tennis, which is a thing that, you know, obviously the companies that make adult diapers want to indicate to people that just because this is something you're dealing with, it shouldn't stop you from playing tennis or living your full life, which is nice. But also there's always that point, and it happens in toilet paper commercials too, where they have to try to illustrate how this helps with your situation, but they can't just like actually show you because it would be considered gross. You know what I mean? You're not like toilet paper companies are always trying to kind of talk around the fact that you're supposed to wipe your bunghole with this stuff.
Well, they used to talk around it. Now I feel like they talk.
Well,
to
so
stir it on.
Well, the cartoon bears are like cleaning up ice cream or sort of eating ice cream, but with the, you know what I mean? Like, it's like there's this kind of, you're right. I think that the, to some degree, the Oops, I Crap My Pants is more of a joke about commercials than it is about people dealing with bladder control issues. So, all right. Well,
Led Zeppelin. All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
I really hope that our new way of getting out of any kind of a tight corner is just to say, Led Zeppelin!
Just yell Led Zeppelin.
Just no matter what's going on, Led Zeppelin! It's like it's like the what is it, the mystery crate on, or whatever it's called on Lebatard.
Oh, right. Yes. Well, actually, I haven't heard
that?
A lot of they do a podcast called Mystery Crate. They just pull something out of a jar, right? Or literally a crate. It's a topic and they'll talk about it. Is that what that is?
For a long time, and you're now much more the expert on that show than I am, but for a long time, they just had this bit going where whenever the conversation either got stagnant, unfunny, or a lot of times they thought that Dan was getting a little bit too on his high horse about some social issue that they didn't think was going to win them ratings, they would just fire this song that then everybody has to sing along with, and then they just bring up a topic like your favorite is bowling a sport or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even think it's a real crate. I think it was just a way of like kind of, you know, changing the subject, and they would and I believe one of the producers, probably Mike or somebody, had the discretion of when to just fire the sound effect.
Yes, I had heard that like once or twice when I was first listening. By the way, I'm coming up to my Lebatardiversary, I realized, because I think I started listening near the end of the football season. I remember I started listening to Lebatard when I kind of got into a rhythm of listening to that show and going to the gym, and I remember them talking about football. I just had this thought the other day, because I was like, oh, I haven't heard these guys talk about football in a while, and I realized, oh, yeah, because I just started listening. It was right around Super Bowl week, Dan. I started listening right before Super Bowl week. So, anyway, that's not interesting.
Guess
anybody,
what, Dan?
Not even me.
The Browns are back. That must have been a very satisfying weekend observation for you yesterday.
Yes, and it was great. Did you listen to Weekend Observations? It was funny.
I did.
With it. No.
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 This
no.
is terrible for our listeners. Just listen to that show and not this one. No, but yeah, their producer, have we mentioned this on the show? Their producer, I think he must have been born in Cleveland. I don't know what it is. He's a huge Miami fan and all things sports, except he's a Cleveland Browns fan. So it's always nice to have that connection as well. All I want after a Browns game is to hear, good or bad, I want to hear other Browns fans talk about it. And I was really miffed that I couldn't find a Browns post-game show on Sunday. All I needed was to hear people talk about that game. And instead, I was like turning on the radio and just hearing, like, you know, boring update, national updates around the league, not like people crying or screaming with joy.
Is this one of those things, Andrew, where you're being penny-wise and pound foolish because you don't want to subscribe to whatever gets you behind the paywall of the land?
Oh, I just won't support that station. I think it's a trash station with trash people.
Oh, okay. It's not about the money.
No. I mean, maybe
is
I would.
There
I also
trash
do,
station
I also
that
do think it's
the...
a little bit ridiculous. Like, for things that I like and support, especially like podcasts, I will definitely do that. Like, and I've been doing more of that, but I'm not. I think their model is crap and exclusionary and also like charging for it. Like, listen, I'll turn on crappy AM sports radio in Cleveland and I'll listen to the ads, you know, and all of that. I love the ads. As a matter of fact, I love hearing the, you know, ads for Drug Mart and other institutions mm-hmm. that I grew up with and had kind of forgotten about their omnipresence. But I think putting a paywall up so I can listen to, you know, Tony Rizzo go crazy and scream his head off and not be prepared. I'm not doing that. But there was another station that I thought had the official postgame show now and that I could listen to it, but I record. It's so funny. I finish watching the Browns game. I run into my studio. I hit stream on the radio player. I hit record on my Adobe Audition. Then I run in the other room and I start the Seahawks game, which is time delayed for me. And then I wait for that game to end. And when that game's over, I come in here. I transfer the audio file to my phone. I put on my my Bluetooth earphones. And then I'm ready for 3 more hours of puttering, listening to post-Browns game talk. And then this week I did that and I put on my phones and it wasn't post Browns game talk. It was just, like I say, boring around the league stuff. I was very disappointed.
That's a bummer.
Yes.
All right. Any emails or V-mails that are are worth highlighting?
It's Jared. I didn't even sing that.
Oh,
right.
It could only be.
It? How do you sing it?
It's Jared. Well, if it depends on which
how did
institution
Spirit
you're talking
do
about.
It? Yeah.
Well, because if it's the Diamond Company, you go with a. It could only be Jared.
There it is.
But then I don't think there was a Jared song on Subway. And if there was, I think it's been scrubbed from the website.
I think so as well. I just wanted to hear you sing. So yeah. Jared writes in from a chemist in the suburb of Basel in Germany.
Ah.
Basel. You know, this name came up the other day on the show. Mm-hmm. I think we must have thanked Jared as a donor of the day. And I think we pronounced it wrong, whatever we said. Anyway, because I saw people chatting about it somewhere. But let's say Basel. Two comments on fake honey and the chemical in Subway bread. For me, the knowledge if the honey. Okay, so let me set this up a little bit here. We were talking about the fact that apparently there's a lot of fake honey on the market. Did you say exactly what it is in the fake honey product that doesn't come
from
bees?
It appears to be a certain amount, like high fructose corn syrup is one of the things. It's just basically some sweet goo
mm-hmm.
that looks and tastes, I guess, much like honey. And then they've also – these honey counterfeiters – have also done things to sort of obscure the origin of the fake honey. So it's hard to trace it back to where it's really from because of a variety of things they kind of do with the mix. And you and I were both saying, you know, honestly, if it's like bee vomit or if it's high fructose corn syrup, is it really that big of a deal? I mean, the problem is that it's driving honest honey producers out of business because they can't make real honey for as cheap as this fake honey is being made.
And I want to actually get a little defensive here for a second, although I don't know if I really need to. I raised the question. I wasn't making the argument, but in this conversation, I raised the question, like, just almost philosophically. If you're creating something that acts, tastes, and does all of the things honey should do and is just as good of a high quality and, you know, again, has the same exact mouthfeel, taste, everything, you literally can't tell the difference of it. Would it matter whether you're buying honey that came from bees or otherwise? I saw somebody be like, well, I would certainly say that this does not taste like honey. I'm like, well, okay, I'm not saying it does. I was just like kind of theoretically saying and asking like, well, maybe there's a reason why we should still go to bees for honey because of the environment or the economy of beekeepers and bee farms. Let's say bee farms. So anyway, I was just kind of raising it like kind of like a philosophical question. I've never had this stuff, and I probably never will, and I'm not making the argument that they do taste the same. But anyway, what Jared says here is, for me, the knowledge that if honey has been diluted is important. There is good evidence that supports that honey does have some health benefits, and as a consumer, I'd like to know what I'm buying. If you're selling it as honey, the perception is that it's pure, while it should be labeled as diluted or altered if it is. Plus, I'd like to know where it is coming from, as I like to buy local. So those are all really good points to that question. And then regarding the Subway bread, the chemical that is put into Subway bread, Luke got excited.
Which famously is also sometimes used in yoga mats. I think
exactly.
That's what people yeah. are not fans of it.
Jared said, Luke got excited that the chemical was being used in yoga mats. Well, please do not fall in this trap. A chemical is just a chemical. Just because it is used in yoga mats does not mean that it is bad for us. I can see why they use it, as it breaks down CO2, NH3, and N2. And I don't know, CO2, I guess I know what that is. Because the bread, they cause the bread to become fluffy. While I do not want the chemical in there either, it's not as, it's generally not for us to eat, but they were going for a cheap way to get the effect that they wanted. My point is, a chemical can be used for many things, for manufacturing goods and food, so its use in something else doesn't mean it's not healthy for us. Although, again, Jared does say he prefers not to have the chemical in his bread, but it doesn't mean it's that just because it's used for other things that it's terrible to also put in food.
Right. It's not like they're putting yoga mats in the bread, which exactly. is kind of where your brain goes when right. you hear about it. Although it is, the brain also has a hard time, at least mine does, of connecting the idea of something being in food that's also used in something that is not for human consumption.
Yeah.
Like something as durable and permanent as a yoga mat and then the bread. And it just seems like, well, if it's in if it's in one of those things, it shouldn't be in the other one. It's just kind of where your mind goes. But I hear what Jared is saying.
Yeah. And I think generally speaking, the thought still is like the best kind of eating we can probably do, as Jared sort of alludes to, is local, you know, getting stuff locally, mm-hmm. organically, all of those things. So, like, and again, when we got done with that conversation, I raced to Subway and bought myself an Italian BMP.
How was that, by the way?
Oh, it was great. It was just so good. Although I was wondering, like, are you sure it's Subway that you need to hollow out the bread in? Because the bread just doesn't seem that thick. Or I get Italian bread all the time there, and it's so squishy and flat to me. It doesn't seem like it really needed to be hollowed out, as you sometimes said you did.
I wonder if part of it is – well, did you get it toasted?
No.
I wonder if part of it is if you get the veggie delight. I usually will get the veggie delight on the wheat bread.
Yeah, I wonder if wheat is thicker.
And I wonder if the wheat bread is a little different consistency, and also if – because I'm not getting a bunch of meat and stuff in there, if it's more noticeable.
Maybe.
By the way, I want to mention to anybody who's curious, all of the yoga mats that I do eat, I locally source them.
Yeah, you have to.
I get them from the farmers, you know, the Fairhaven Farmers Market.
Yeah, because you want to make sure that the yoga mats were raised right.
Absolutely.
All right, that's
humanely.
What I got for emails today.
Hey, can we go out with that Lead Belly song? I was actually kind of digging it.
Yes, it's only a minute long. What's it called? Millie?
It's called Bring Me a Little Water, Sylvie.
Okay, Sylvie, yeah.
I'm just laughing because... unfortunately, forever in my mind, it won't be the Lead Belly version. It'll be, you know, this stupid
thing. Bring me a little water now. Bring me a little water, Sylvie.
So I guess we'll go out with a little Lead Belly and say thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. Appreciate you all. We'll be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio, so please do join us for that. Until then, enjoy your Tuesday, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Bring a little water now. Bring a little water, Sylvie. Every little once in a while. Bring a little water, Sylvie. Bring a little water now. Bring a little water, Sylvie. Every little once in a while. Don't you see me coming? Don't you see me now? Don't you see me coming every little once in a while? Bring me the bucket, Sylvie. Bring me the bucket now. Bring me the bucket, Sylvie. Every little once in a while. Bring me a little water, Sylvie. Bring me a little water now. Bring me a little water, Sylvie. Every little once in a while. Every little once in a while. I said it. Every little once in a while.
Power out.